You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
As we get near the end of our Julian series, I want to again thank my partner in crime, the Reverend Jeff Proctor Murphy, pastor at Dayspring, for working together with me on these messages. I also want to thank Jeff's associate pastors, the Reverend Shirley Wells and Reverend Joel Bullock, for their insights. And for today, I want to say thanks to Reverend Amy Nothbaum, the community curator at Dayspring and Aldersgate, for her work on today's theme. You all know by now that, with one exception, the seven authentic letters of Paul are written to churches that Paul actually started, or to people that he knew. The one exception is Romans. Paul has never met them, but he's heard enough that he can make some recommendations on how they can live together as a community. Romans is essentially a cold call to a community saying, look, I want to come visit you, and what I'd really like you to do is get some of these things worked out before I get there. We're hearing the Message version today because I love the way Eugene Peterson paraphrased so many of Paul's otherwise highfalutin recommendations into colloquial Americanisms. In this excerpt, Paul pays special attention to instructions on how to deal with evil, enemies, and getting along in general, culminating in his admonition to not let evil get the best of you, but to get the best of evil by doing good. Our passage from Julian is also the culmination of a long argument that takes a step beyond Paul to the consequences of letting love do its work in the face of evil. So let's hear what Julian and Paul have to say about overcoming evil with good and with love.
Our words of wisdom today are from Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21, and Julian's Revelations of Divine Love, chapter 13. From Romans, love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Run for dear life from evil. Hold on for dear life to good. Be good friends who love deeply. Practice playing second fiddle. Don't burn out. Keep yourselves fueled and aflame. Be alert servants of the master, cheerfully expectant. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. Help needy Christians. Be inventive in hospitality.
Bless your enemies. No cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends when they're happy. Share tears when they're down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. Don't be the great somebody. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. If you've got it in you, get along with everybody. Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it.
Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch. Or if he's thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good.
From Revelations of Divine Love, when we see that the power of love overcomes the spirit of evil, it fills our hearts with comfort and joy. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
My first John Shelby Spong book changed my life. Published 30 years ago, rescuing the Bible from fundamentalism was like cool water for a then parched young pastor. Here was a bishop who not only embraced the kind of rational, critical thinking that I did, but gave me permission to talk about it with more confidence. Here was someone who faced the same kinds of threats and irrational hatred that I'd already experienced and with which I would become more familiar over the years. He told the story of detractors, good Christians all, who sent letters saying they were praying for the next plane he was on to crash, regardless of how many innocent lives would be lost. In their twisted minds, Jack's death was so critical that it just didn't matter who else was killed. I don't know about you, but I think that that kind of hatred and intimidation is solidly in the evil category. But faced with threats and loathing, Jack modeled an almost Zen-like calm and pointed out that when you look at Jesus, you see that nothing managed to diminish his life, and he never diminished anybody else's life. Jack said of Jesus, "People betrayed him, and he responded by loving them. People denied him, and he responded by loving them. People forsook him, and he responded by loving them. People tormented him, and he responded by loving them. People killed him, and he responded by loving them." Isn't that the whole kit and caboodle? I mean, Jesus responded with love, no matter what. And according to Paul, responding with love can so discombobulate those who would otherwise be on about doing evil that they can go into a kind of vapor lock. It just makes no sense to them. Then Julian follows up and offers a bonus for those overcoming evil with love. When we see that the power of love overcomes the spirit of evil, it fills our hearts with comfort and joy. Responding with love, no matter the cost, is what Jesus, Paul, and Julian all taught and modeled. In one of Julian's visions, the spirit of evil was personified as a huge snarling monster with hairy paws and sharp teeth. It smelled obnoxious and it pulsed with heat. Moved to despair, she woke from her dream, not in a panic, but with an overwhelming sense of the triumph of Christ over this soulless creature who hates all things that are good. In fact, Julian laughs at what she calls her adversary's impotence. "God sees evil for what it is," she says, "and scorns it, and always will." The word evil in Greek is kakos. It's the root of our English word cacophony. The root word expresses a sense of lack, something that's not whole. It's ruinous or malicious or hurtful. But its root meaning comes down to us in our word for noise. Julian's response to the noise of evil is to recover our sense of beauty and goodness, to awaken from the inertia, the apathy, and the slumber that keeps us in league with that snarling, smelly monster and reminds us to see evil for what it is, just so much noise. Julian's vision is not some naive optimism or wishful thinking either. She knows that the noise can hurt. But nevertheless, she reminds us that Jesus' teachings and example set before us a deep call to action, a new trajectory, and encouragement to lean into our calling, to love the world into a breakthrough moment. Through upwards of 30 years contemplating those 16 deathbed visions of Jesus, Julian came to the conclusion that life on this earth is primarily a journey of goodness, overcoming wickedness, and bringing all back into wellness and peace. Despite living in the midst of global pandemic, struggling with the consequences of not a 20-year war, but a 100-years war, and all the other human vices that have existed across time from hers to ours, she managed to hold on to the conviction that goodness is our destiny. Our work in the world is to be midwives of wholeness, of wellness. You should know by now that Julian had an unshakable faith that all shall be well, which she repeats over and over again. But she's not a naive bystander, trusting some divine outside source to make all things well. She says, "Love is not just about feeling. It leads to action." Unfortunately, the way of the world seems to be that the more of a toehold goodness gets, the more evil seems to be stirred up. In fact, that's pretty much the storyline in every popular book and movie across the planet. Julian wouldn't be surprised that since 1977, when the first Star Wars movie came out, the Star Wars media empire has made almost $70 billion. Not to be outdone, the Disney Princess's empire is close behind at almost $50 billion. While there are huge marketing machines behind each of these franchises, their ultimate success is rooted in the fact that we just love our stories of good versus evil. Now, I'm pretty sure that Julian would not be happy that so many of our myths and stories depend on violence as a primary means to restore peace. But she understands that human beings have a deep longing for love and wholeness and are willing to go to great lengths to achieve them. She says, "We will never be fully liberated until we are at peace and love. Our search for and longing for goodness is innate, and goodness is the source of love and hope. Where goodness is missing in human nature, it is our task to make it right again." Okay, fine, you say. How is it not hopelessly naive to cling to Julian's claim that our nature is wholeness and goodness? She may have lived through a pandemic, but come on, she didn't have to deal with the obstacles to goodness we have today. Our guide to Julian, Matthew Fox, says, "Evil was not an abstraction in Julian's time. Just like today, the world she lived in was full of all the same kinds of evil: greed, envy, selfishness, willful ignorance, apathy, violence, oppression, and exploitation of not only human beings, but of the planet." Julian said, "When I say the spirit of evil, what I mean is everything that is counter to peace and love." What she also knew was that in the long run, efforts to promote goodness and wholeness carried more weight than evil ever could. But it's not without sacrifice. Think back to the story of Jesus overturning the tables in the temple. He saw greed and exploitation taking root and created a scene, shouting and driving people out. But that wasn't where it ended. Next, he heals the blind and the lame. Then he rejoiced with the children. Jesus shows us a path that Julian would recognize in her life: righteous indignation, healing, rejoicing, repeat. Righteous indignation, healing, rejoicing, repeat. And yeah, righteous indignation is complicated. We're not talking about the manufactured outrage from cable news or social media. Jesus shows us a kind of divine rage, a holy anger. Sikh author and activist Valerie Kaur says this kind of rage is not vengeance, but a path to reorder the world. It is precise and purposeful. I like that, the precise and purposeful reordering of the world. Let's face it, love cannot overcome evil passively. Peacefully, yes. Passively, no. Love can be the gentle hug of a loved one, and it can also be the snarl of a tiger protecting its cubs. Gandhi, Harriet Tubman, Nelson Mandela, they all knew the drill. They knew from experience that after the righteous indignation, after the hard work of confronting evil with love, there was not only the promise of a new world, but of new relationships, even with enemies. I love Paul's counterintuitive advice to not only bless our enemies and to not hit back, but to feed them as well. Seriously? Yeah. In this day of lawsuits and claims on the craziest of things, isn't Paul being a little impractical? Maybe not. When someone hurts you deeply, instead of giving them what they deserve, Paul says to befriend them. Why? Because it breaks the cycle of retaliation that is our primal nature, and it might even shame the person into changing their ways. On the other hand, to return evil for evil clogs us up with anger and bitterness. I get it. This is a real challenge, especially considering the divisiveness, incivility, and hatred being expressed every day in every part of our lives. But Jesus, Paul, and Julian agree. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good. Julian wrote, "Where goodness is missing in human nature, it is our task to make it right again." And how do we do that? Through action, through love, by not being deterred from expressing our core identities as compassionate, determined followers of Jesus. One day, two monks were washing their bowls in the river when they noticed a scorpion that was drowning. One of the monks immediately scooped it up and set it on the bank. In the process of moving the scorpion, the monk was stung. Nevertheless, he went back to washing his bowl, only to notice that the scorpion had once again fallen into the river. Without hesitation, the monk reached down and, while saving the scorpion, was stung again. The other monk asked him, "Friend, why do you continue to save the scorpion when you know its nature is to sting?" "Because," the monk replied, "to save it is my nature." Julian declares that our nature, our core, is that of goodness. But not just any goodness. It's a goodness that has the power to stare down whatever evil has on tap for the world and to bear whatever stings evil cares to mete out. All we have to do is to be reassured that given the chance, the power of love overcomes the spirit of evil every time. We need to set ourselves to doing the work, steel ourselves for the setbacks, and always remember that all will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.